Fedheads, welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is Sharing Our Pairings, episode 85, Spotlight on Foundry, short pour edition. I'm your host, John Cigar Surgeon, broadcast around the world in the Armed Forces Radio Network, and of course on YouTube and every podcast app out there. If you aren't listening on podcasts, you should be. Search for CigarFederation.com and search any podcast catcher out there. We're everywhere. Sharing Our Pairings is brought to you by Gurkha Cigars, maker of the finest cigars in the world. Check your local B&M today. If you can't find them at your local B&M, check your online supplier. There's a cigar right for you. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Robbie Rass. Rob, what's going on today, brother?
I love how you say supplier like it's a drug.
It's a legal, legal drug.
Like I got to check with my supplier, bro.
Got to check your supplier, bro.
That's funny to me. No, man, things are good. It's spoilers. We're doing a little pre-record here.
Short spoilers.
Board, but it's a nice Friday, and I've got a ton of work to do. But it's nice to take a little break here and have a little smoke. And I really dig this band, dude. On the cigar.
Right.
It's really cool.
It reminds me of hologram and stuff.
Yeah, it reminds me of those hologram baseball cards from back in the day. Mm-hmm. 89 Upper Deck had a little hologram on the back, and they came with hologram stickers. I'm aging myself a little bit, but.
I'm also rocking the Foundry Love with the Foundry Skull, which was probably one of the coolest packaging at the IPCPR.
Yeah, that humidor that Michael was showing us, and the timeliness of this of this show is kind of creepy with Michael now having left Foundry, but
surprise.
What, was it today or yesterday or whenever that was? So
yeah, I think it was yesterday.
Anyway, I mean, we had this show planned for a while, so. It's just kind of weird that all happened at the same time. But anyway, yeah, the packaging and everything was really cool. I liked the boxes that these cigars came in. And that skull shape was pretty sweet. But ultimately, who really cares what the band looks like, what the box looks like, it's how it smokes. So we're just getting into this thing. I mean, just barely lit up. It's, so far, so good.
Yeah, so far, so good.
We'll talk about the specs a little bit.
I do. So this is today we're smoking the Foundry Time Flies, which is the latest release from Foundry General Cigars, featuring tobaccos Corojo and Criollo from AJ Fernandez. And I know Rob loves that. I mean, who doesn't love AJ Fernandez? Everyone was blending with AJ this year, so everyone loved AJ this year. Lots of collaborations. Features a Nicaraguan binder and filler. What I think is cool when you're talking about the packaging is the box color represents the size. So we are smoking the 550, which is the Robusto, comes in a green box. They've also got the MSRP, I think, is about 750. Comes in a yellow box, which is the 526, is a Toro. And that's, I think, $8. The 54725, which is a red box, is the Churchill. And that's about $8.50. And then lastly, the 606, which is the blue box, and that's the Gigante, which, you know, Gordo, and that's about $9.
But how do you feel about the Gordo?
Man, you know, if we could just get everything to large ring gauge, that'd be, no. I mean, if you're going to make a large ring gauge, I implore you, box press it. Because
yeah, we were just talking about that.
We were just talking about that.
Yeah, that's the only 70 ring gauge I've ever smoked is box press, and still wasn't easy to smoke, but. Yeah, if it's going to be a large ring gauge, it needs to be Figurado or something, a torpedo even. Although you're not going to see a torpedo that size, but box press, something where it's not, I don't know. I don't know what the term is that I'm looking for. Let's just move on.
Uncomfortable, I think,
yes,
is the term.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, beyond the fact that it's uncomfortable, you're completely messing with the ratio of the wrapper, which is the most expensive part of the tobacco. And you're blowing that out because you've got, like, I don't know, 15 leaves in there or something. It's not 15 leaves, but it's probably like 6 or 7 leaves of tobacco, which is just ridiculous.
Although when we, on our last Sharing Our Pairings show, Terrence did make a pretty good point, Terrence from Casada Cigars, that now that 60 ring gauge, 70 ring gauge, those are here to stay. It's not just a fad.
Anymore. Not going away.
People are more, they're blending to that now.
Yeah.
They're blending more to that size. I never really thought about it that way. Those first few 60 ring gauges that came out, sure, I imagine those nubs that came out in that size were all blended to that size because it was the only size that it came out in. So, of course, they're going to blend to that.
Yeah.
But the guys who were just adding that 60 to their lineup just to get it in there, maybe they were just saying, here's a ton of filler, let's just make it work. But now I think you're seeing a lot more cigars that are blended to that size. So you're getting, it's not just, you know, you've got your wrapper, you've got your binder, and here's just a ton of fillers. There's everything's kind of done for a reason with that size. So yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Speaking of, just a throwback to Terrence on Sharing Our Pairings, on our last episode of Sharing Our Pairings, I placed an order and I've got a 5-pack of the Little Shorty, which I want to say it's the Brauhaus coming, and then a couple of the Nicaraguan coming. So
well, the Brauhaus is the Nicaraguan. That's the Flying Pig size.
Okay. Well, I got a 5-pack of whatever the Dominican is, and then a 2-pack of the I must be thinking the Brauhaus is the 2-pack of the Nicaraguan I've got coming. So I've got some coming. So we'll be definitely featuring some more Oktoberfest pairings in the near future here, because that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I need to get my hands on some of the Dominican. I think the short Robusto that you're talking about, the little one, is Cruz. I think that's what it's called.
Oh, okay.
Or Cruz or something like that, which means short in German. That's what you're saying during the show. Because I've got a couple of those that are from 2011 or 2012, like the one that you were smoking. And I'd like to bring those out too. So that could be fun. But I'm looking at the wrapper, or not the wrapper, the band on this thing. And they've got
a story.
Yeah, I was looking at this, and I don't know if you noticed this, but it's...
Yeah, you want to read it off?
Yeah, it's almost like little...
mantras?
Little motivational phrases. Leave your mark, start something, call your mother.
You're beautiful, and don't let anyone tell you you're not.
So I'll just go down the list here. Leave your mark, start something, call your mother, finish something, that's what I need to do. Help a friend, make a statement, set a goal, challenge the world, exceed expectations, just go, seize the day, and expect the unexpected. Not sure what the impetus behind that is. Oh, there's a couple more that are covered, but whatever. That's enough for story time today.
It's beer time.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's jump in.
So we're doing a short pour today. We do short pours occasionally. It allows us to feature on one beverage, kind of not shock our palates. We've got a lot of feedback from people that really like the short pour style. We're not going to be doing it every week, but when Robbie's busy, when I'm busy opening 15 stores trying to capitalize on Western Canada for the cigar industry, we got to do short pour because that's how it works. So I'm going first with, I love those Quebec breweries. They can do no wrong. And this is Le Trou du Diable, which means Hall of the Devil, which, you know, I mean, come on, that's awesome. And this is the Four Surfers of the Apocalypso, and it's kind of got that cool, you know, tribal skull, and then it's got the other tribal skulls on there. And it's just, I mean, you look at this beer, and you're like, even if you don't want an IPA, you kind of want to pick this beer up.
It's very funny. Cool. It's funny. I really like the label, and I'd probably buy it just based on that, but I wouldn't think that it was an IPA. For some reason, I'd look at that and think it was like a winter ale or something.
Well, and it's kind of one of those, you know, as people expand the what is considered a particular style of beer, and this is certainly expanding it because they describe this as a combination of a Belgian white with the hoppy character of an American IPA. So essentially taking a Belgian white and really ramping up the flavor profile. They say it's got generous head, giggity. Aromas of resin, candy, lychee, and pear. I really get a lot of orange off the nose. Like I was commenting before we started that almost a blood orange off the nose, very orangey. And then on the palate, orange without that bitterness and a little bit of grapefruit quality. And I was worried that it was going to way overpower the cigar, but it's not. That's the nice thing about some of the Nicaraguan tobacco is it really stands up to a full-bodied beer. Smooth palate is just like a long-lasting wave of piney bitterness, just asking to be ridden. Ingredients are pretty straightforward: water, malted wheat, barley, hops, yeast, blah 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 blah. And they call it a strong. Of course, on this show we reintroduce what strong is every week. This is 6.5% ABV, which on this show is really sessionable. Not really sessionable at a bottle this size, but 60 IBUs, and it's interesting. I'll let you talk about your beer. I'll just say that this cigar is settled in nicely. It's got started out with some great spicy character and maybe hints of pepper. What I like about AJ's blends is that he blends for body. He doesn't just dial everything to 10 and, you know, there's not one character note, flavor note that's just blasting everything out of the park. And I'm actually getting some chocolate notes here as the first beer kind of settles in. What do you got going on for beers?
I'll jump into the beer in a second. The the spice is kind of, it came and went really fast at the beginning.
Yeah.
Both on the tongue and on the retrohale. it's really woody to me.
Yeah, I got a lot of cedar.
Very woody profile. A lot of hay and things like that. I want it to kind of thicken up and get a bit more richness in there. Not a lot of sweetness. You're talking about some chocolate. I'm hoping that that shows up in mine. I'm not really getting much of that. But it's not that I don't like it. I'm actually enjoying it. It's a bit lighter than I thought it was going to be, at least in body, like you were just talking about. So hopefully that it's going to pick up here in a little bit. But it's actually going really well with my the beer that I'm pairing with, which is the I went more with more of a traditional IPA, the Zombrew IPA from Epidemic Ales. And they are literally right down the street from me. Concord, California, they are, I say right down the street. They're a couple miles away. Epidemic.
It's Canadian walking distance.
Yeah, right. They've been around, pulling up their website. Their tap room opened on January 2nd of this year, 2016. So the tap room hasn't been around that long. And I believe that they've, I pulled up the Zombrew here on Beer Advocate, and it was added in July of 2015. So I believe they must have been bottling this before their tap room opened up. But
just a little baby brewery.
Yeah, they've just barely been around. It's six owners, and they just started as home brewers. They don't talk about it too much here on their site. It just says it's a joint venture that began as a hobby. The idea behind a hobby is you have to love it. We love what we do, but honestly, how could we not? Because they're making beer. And they've got a handful of different things on tap. They don't have a list right here. I was just down there with my wife probably 3 months ago, and they had seven or eight things on tap. They're the beer that they're known for is their Nightshade. I believe it's Nightshade. And it's a barrel-aged vanilla stout. And it is quite tasty. It's a little bit on the sweet side for me. Okay. And I actually liked, they had the regular stout before they barrel aged it. And I actually thought that was more in my wheelhouse. It wasn't quite as sweet, but still very, very good. So the Zombrew IPA, 7% ABV, although everywhere you look online, it says it's 9.6. So I'm thinking that it must have been a double IPA when they first released it and have since changed.
Stepped it down?
Yeah, because this one's only 7%. I said only. That's still pretty high for kind of a regular beer. 7% is pretty good. Kind of got that nice honeyed orange color to it. Not a lot of head on it, but a lot of citrus. And you probably heard me when I cracked open the bottle just before the show. It's like ton of citrus and tropical fruit from the hops right up when you crack the bottle. And on the pour, you get a lot of that same thing, a lot of that tropical fruit, tangerine. Grapefruit.
Beers are very similar.
Looks like you're a little bit on the lighter side, and maybe, a little, that's more, got more haze to it, maybe an unfiltered situation you got going there. But
cloudy ditties.
They don't break down too much about the hops and things that are used. They just describe it as a frighteningly good IPA with medium malt body that allows you to really sink your teeth into the five different hop varieties. I'd be curious to see which hops are in here.
That's a lot of hops.
your mouth will be murdered. Whoa. With
violent,
striking but balanced bitterness, and reanimated with the subtle fruit flavors and snappy dry finish.
Nice.
And the artwork on their stuff is really cool. You can check them out at epidemicales.com. But so far, the pairing's doing really well. How are things working out for you there?
It's good. I was really worried when it started. And like you said, I think this Foundry Time Flies started out a little bit lighter than, and it settled in nicely to about a medium level. If it had stayed where it started, I would have been very concerned about this IPA running it over. I'm just going to give a little shout out about Le Tour de Diable. They opened in 2005, and the name is a reference to a whirlpool called the Cauldron, which is at the bottom of Shawinigan Falls. Now, everyone in Canada knows where Shawinigan is, even though it's a little tiny town in Quebec, because that's where one of our prime ministers, Jean Chrétien, came from. And if you've got some time, go to YouTube and Google, or YouTube, the Shawinigan Handshake, which was an infamous incident where a protester got in the face of our prime minister And in Canada, unlike in the States where the Secret Service would have jumped on him and taken him down, our Prime Minister just took care of business, just grabbed him by the throat with one hand and grabbed his face with the other hand, and we call it the Schwinnigan handshake because he kind of just took him down by himself. And I didn't really think much of him as a Prime Minister, but that was definitely a hallmark moment in Canadian history. But getting back to this beer, it's nice. I think if we'd gone to a double IPA or something hoppier than this, it absolutely would have run over the nuances of the cigar. I think this is really as heavy as I would go. We were talking maybe doing porters possibly, and I think you could get away with a porter here as long as it wasn't too sweet. Stouts, I think, would be way out of the line to pair with this cigar, because I think a stout would just run it right over.
I think an IPA is perfect. And John was saying we were thinking about going stouts, and I've got a shake chocolate porter here from Boulder Beer that I was going to crack open. And until I noticed that, and I don't know if you can read that, it says, enjoy by August 25th of 2015. So that's over a year ago that this beer's enjoy by date came and went. So we decided to pass on that. I think that a porter would be way too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'm thinking I wouldn't want to go much more than like a brown ale, maybe.
Although an Irish stout might be interesting, because
Irish stout, that could be an interesting call. Although I think this IPA goes really well. There's this the flavor profile is ombre. It's very fruity on the nose, but right up front it's more piney, right? You get a little bit of that dankness in there, and the finish has more of that citrusy quality to it. So right off the bat, you're hit with those piney notes, which I really dig in an IPA
for sure.
And it's a bit more herbal, right? And there's kind of an herbal quality to this cigar, like a floral quality. Herbal's not the right term. Floral's the right term. More of a floral quality from the cigar. Brings that out a little bit in the beer as well. But
almost like the character of gin, kind of.
Yeah, like a juniper berry. Not quite that strong, but yeah. I'm getting more of that floral stuff, and I still get those woody notes from the cigar. And a little bit of, like a baking spice is starting to come around on the retrohale. It started out as kind of like a white generic heat, as opposed to like a red pepper spice or something like that. But now it's kind of morphing into something that's got a little bit of sweetness to it on the retrohale, almost kind of a nougaty sweetness in the retrohale as well. That's it's kind of funky now. It's you get that it almost takes that fruit flavor from the cigar, and you get kind of like a creamsicle kind of thing, like an orange creamsicle kind of situation. Mm-hmm. Orange Julius. I don't know if they had those up in Canada.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but yeah, something like that, and it's a refreshing pairing, actually. And we talk about IPAs and thinking that they're going to be tough to pair, but every time we do it, I feel like it works.
We're just that good, really.
We're just that good.
So talking about this, I'm kind of getting into the middle third here, and that cedar is definitely built in intensity. Like the cedar is almost taking over the profile from the spices that were there, because the spices were very nuanced. But there is a nice cocoa powder, like you're talking about a nougaty character, and I'm getting like a powdered cocoa that's kind of counterbalancing. The retrohale was had some bite to it in the first third, and it's really stepped down. I love a cigar that evolves. It starts out at one thing and either evolves to something different or picks up in intensity as it goes. That's kind of what I look for in a cigar. Every cigar doesn't have to be that way, but I do love a cigar that evolves. And, we've got a few of these, so we'll probably be doing another show with the Time Flies. And I know we've got probably a group review coming up in the near future, but I'm impressed so far. I mean, I didn't read before I started the cigar, so I try to keep it as blind as possible. But the fact that this has AJ tobacco and comes from AJ's factory totally makes sense. Like this smokes like, like when you've smoked enough cigars from a factory and you smoke something made by somebody else from that factory, you go, okay, yep, I can totally see this coming from that factory.
Yeah. It's definitely got some AJ characteristics to it. And the more that we're getting into this, the intensity in the retrohale is picking up. The intensity of the spice that is on the retrohale is definitely picking up, but it's got more flavor to it. It's not just heat. There's that, and maybe there's a little bit of cocoa powder that I'm getting in there that you're talking about. Maybe not, but it's definitely more of a baking spice, and a little bit of that sweetness on the retrohale. It's kind of nice. It's not overpowering, but again, it's the wood characteristics for me are really the main focus, which is a little bit unique. I mean, usually, at least for me, when I'm picking up those wood notes, they're more secondary than to be kind of the focal point. And you get just that woody notes and some spice, a little bit of sweetness, not a ton of richness in here, not a lot of, not really much earthy quality at all.
Which I'm okay with, because I'm not a huge fan of dank, you know, peaty earth. And unless I'm smoking something super full bodied, I'm generally not in the earth. That's one of the flavor profiles I'm not really a big fan of personally.
Yeah, I mean, this, I don't know, what's the price point on this? You said like $8?
$7.50 MSRP, which is very reasonable. I mean, you look at the packaging presents itself like a $9 cigar, but I mean, $7.50 on a Robusto, that's a nugget that most people, even the guys who are price conscious, can probably pick up a couple or a five pack at $7.50. That's not bad.
Yeah, I'm thinking if it's $7.50, you can probably find a five pack online somewhere in like the $35 range.
Absolutely.
But that's not bad for a five pack. And this has the kind of cigar where you can grab it and smoke it really at any time. It's not going to blow you away in strength, but there's enough flavor here to keep you interested. It's definitely got some transitions. Like you said, I mean, you can go back to the beginning of the show. Things really have changed as the cigar goes on. Nice construction, nice burn. It's not like one of those cigar of the year type cigars, but I don't know that that's really what their goal was. It's just kind of, it's something that I could pick up and smoke really at any time and enjoy it. So,
and I get to me, what's funny about those cigars of the year is that now that I see things from a retailer's perspective, cigars of the year are great and we love them, but they don't necessarily sell at a B&M unless, you know, they appear in the top 10 cigar aficionado and then people go nuts. But like typically highly rated cigars don't necessarily perform well in the real world. This is the kind of cigar that pairs or that performs really well in the real world. You know, like this, I'm not going to name other brands, but I can think of like a half dozen other brands that you don't think of as a showcase brand, but they sell every day, all day. And this is, to me, the kind of cigar that appeals to a pretty broad audience. And like you said, I could absolutely see myself sitting down on a Saturday afternoon, crack an IPA, and have one of these bad boys and be satisfied with that experience.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I was getting at. It's not a special occasion cigar. It's kind of like an everyday cigar, and that just feels so negative to say that. But
yeah, but it's a positive.
Yeah, and it pairs well with IPA. I mean, and this IPA is a middle of the road IPA. It's not overly hoppy. It's not overly danky. It's not too far in one direction. So you get a little bit. It's I don't know. It's just a very approachable IPA in my opinion, and that nice little citrus punch right on the end, almost like a little palate cleanser going into the next puff of the cigar. It's really really satisfying, and it's I want to try this. If we do a full show on this, I'm definitely going all IPAs now because I'm curious to see how it would do with. Or maybe a brown ale too, something like that. Maybe to focus a little bit more on the sweeter side of things. But yeah, I'm curious to see how it would pair against other things.
Yeah, and the tasting notes, they talked about this for Surfers of the Apocalypso as being a very piney finish, but I actually find it to be a very short piney finish. And I think if it was a big IPA where, you know, some of the West Coast IPAs have a lot of pine notes to it, I'm not sure the bitterness of that pine would necessarily go well if it was super piney. I'm not sure it would go really well with this cigar because I think, for me, pininess tends to be pretty dominating in the palate, and I think that might run over the cigar a little bit. But, yeah, like you said, we keep talking about how hard it is to pair with IPAs, and yet here's another cigar that pairs beautifully with an IPA. So,
yeah.
Turns out it's not that hard.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if I go with another IPA, I'd probably go – if I had to choose, I would go more on the hoppy side as opposed to more on the danky side.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, just because I feel like both would work. But I think going with something that's a bit more hoppy, it's going to have more fruit characteristic to it. That just makes for a more pleasant pairing experience, I think, with this particular cigar. For me, I think there is definitely a place for those pine forward and danky IPAs. I have to be in the mood for those myself, but
yeah.
There's pairings out there that would work. I just don't know if this is one of them.
Talking about this cigar is kind of an everyday cigar. You look at the Vitolas, it really is blended to be that marketplace. You know, we talk about being that particular Vitolas like Lancero or Corona. They don't really necessarily sell that well in the actual marketplace. Cigar geeks love them. Guys who are hardcore cigar smokers love them. But for the B&M, they don't necessarily move very well. And I think they obviously, based on the flavor profile, I'm assuming, they said, well, this is a cigar that's going to appeal to a pretty broad audience. So let's make sure the Vitolas are appropriate for that audience. And they've done that. I think it'd be interesting to try this in a Churchill, a little bit of a smaller ring gauge. You know, even a Gordo, I'd be curious to see how it performs in a larger ring gauge. But in this Robusto, I'm a happy camper. I'm enjoying this all day long.
Yeah, this is the kind of cigar you'll find in a Robusto, a Toro, and a Gordo. And, you know, maybe they'll throw a Churchill in there. I don't know. Churchill's really sell anymore, but maybe throw a Torpedo in there. But those are your basic sizes, and that makes sense for a blend like this. Definitely works with the Zombrew. And, Epidemic Ales, if you're in the area, I don't think they distribute too far, but they're definitely in the San Francisco Bay Area. So if you're around, check them out. When I was at their tap room, which is a pretty cool setup that they've got. I'm looking on their website. They don't have it listed anymore, but I want to say that they had an Irish style red ale.
Ooh.
That was very good. And I don't see it here. They've got an amber that I've had that was good. There's a brown that I didn't have. Their pale ale was solid. There's a couple of other ones here that I have not tried. The Nightshade, of course, is quite tasty. Their lager was actually really good. Lager at World's End, and their artwork is cool. They've got a couple of new ones. Hurricane Effie is an American wheat, and Brain Bash Wet Hopped IPA. So I'm curious to try those two out.
I ended up picking up, I think, three other La Tour du Diable releases. So they're kind of all over the place. I've got a strong ale, I've got a stout, I've got something else that I can't remember the name of because I just buy more than I drink. But I'd be interested to try those different styles now that I like this particular, you know, Belgian IPA mashup. I think it'd be interesting for me to try another release from this particular brewery with this cigar to see how it performs, whether it's better, worse, the same. And that, to me, is kind of fun. You get a style from a brewery that's really good. Sometimes that can be a good indication that you're probably going to, you know, it's like a cigar from a manufacturer. You're like, well, this is really key to my palate. And I find the same with beers. If I have a couple styles from a brewery and I go, okay, well, they obviously are key to my palate, so I can probably try a bunch from them and it'll all be interesting or good.
Yeah, one last note, because I think we're running out of time here, on the cigar. As we're getting to the midpoint here, the finish on it is very dry.
Yeah.
For me, and the flavors are pretty dry, but in a good way, where I think that's why, and this IPA has kind of a crisp finish to it, so it doesn't linger too much on the palate. So I think that's why they're mixing really well together. I don't know if I'd want something that lingers too much with this, because the flavor that you're getting from the cigar, you hit with that, those woody notes, bam, and you get that spice on the retrohale and a little bit of sweetness, but that's it. And then it's like, boom, it's done.
Yeah, very short finish.
Dry, dry finish, which is unique. This is kind of a unique cigar, man. And I'm looking forward to doing a review. I'm curious to see how this one ended up scoring for us.
There you go. So that's the Foundry Time Flies. Check out your local B&M, and if you can't find it from your local B&M, you can certainly ask them, or I'm sure this is one you'll be able to find at your online supplier all over the United States, because this, like I said, I think this is going to appeal to a pretty broad audience. We'll be back next week with another live sharing our pairings, and I think we might have to switch it up, maybe go for some brown liquor, maybe some rums, bourbons, or spirits, some scotchy. Because it's getting to be a little in the chilly character up here. I might bust out some of those scotchies. But appreciate everyone who's tuned in to this short pour edition of Sharing Our Pairings, episode 85. Check us next week. We'll be live. You can get your questions in at CigarFederation.com. And again, check us out on your local podcaster app if you don't have time to watch us live. And who does at this point? Everyone's so busy. I love listening to podcasts in the car. It's kind of my jam now. So you can definitely find us on podcast catchers. Just search for Cigar Federation. Thanks very much for checking out another Sharing Our Pairings. We'll be back next week. And as we say on Sharing Our Pairings, drink better, but drink less. So I feel like because we're on this NFL kick, maybe we should get our NFL picks out, because I got – so we're kind of – we're recording a week ahead, so it's –
you know, are we still live?
We still live.
Oh, okay. That's good. I didn't tell you to go fuck off or tell anybody else to go fuck off.
That's right. but, I mean, certainly if you want to go fuck off, you're certainly welcome to. You know, we're not going to
say. So are we going to do next week's picks right now?
That's right. So we're going to do the week 4 picks.
Okay.
you know, which again, we're doing it blind, so we don't know how teams performed in week three yet. Definitely. Other than the Patriots, who we've watched the Thursday night game and utter domination. With
I'm going to throw my hat in to be their quarterback just for a game.
Yeah,
they should do like a fan, like a promotion. Just pick a fan.
Mm-hmm.
Like just the absolute total middle finger to the rest of the league.
I mean, it's, you know, I expected them to win because, frankly, the team has got a lot of talent. It's got a Hall of Fame coach. I don't think, even though I hate the Patriots, I respect them. And there's no doubt in my mind that Bill Belichick is one of the best coaches in NFL in the last 20 or 30 years. And he's taken a team of talent and he puts in a quarterback that I don't even remember the name of the quarterback they started. And not only did they beat the Houston Texans, they blanked them. Like, it was just a complete domination. Like, just an utter crushing, 27-0. Like, that's nuts.
Yeah, you can tell that the defense. I didn't watch the game, but you can tell that the defense, based on the stats, they just kind of stepped up and said, look, we need to win this game.
Yeah.
And the defense needs to carry them, and they did. And they've got the talent to do that, so God bless them.
So if you want to participate in our weekly picks, and we'll have to do our – because we'll be 2 weeks behind, essentially, by the time this comes back. So on a live show, I'll do the two-week recap. If you want to get your show picks in for NFL for week four, you can email surgeon@cigarfederation.com. Got to do it before game time, guys. If you don't do it before game time, I'm just assuming you're cheating. So we'll talk about the Thursday, the September the 29th game, Thursday night game. I'm not sure how much of a game it's going to be. Dolphins on the road facing the Bengals at home.
Yeah, that I don't know what the Bengals are going to do this week, but that feels like a Bengals win, doesn't it?
It really does. yeah. Dolphins have, I mean, they just, luck has not been doing well. Team just hasn't been performing well. And the Bengals, we talked about this last year, we talked about this year. The Bengals feels like that team that's just waiting to break out, and we keep waiting for them to break out, and they keep not breaking out, but... Thursday night game, Bengals. I kind of got to give it to the home team. I got to go with the Bengals.
Yeah, I'm totally down with that.
Super early morning game. Colts on the road facing the Jacksonville Jaguars at home. I don't need to talk about that. It's Colts.
Yeah, it has a trappy kind of feel to it.
It does.
But I'll go with the Colts as well.
Normal morning game. The Titans on the road against the Texans. Now the Texans just got beat up. And that's exactly the kind of game you don't want to be facing a team at home because they're going to be embarrassed. They're going to be angry. Your gut instinct is to flop the other way and say, well, the Titans are going to stomp them. And I think that's the trap. So I'm going to go with the Texans at home.
I think I'm going to fall for the trap and go with the Titans. I'm not looking at any records or anything. I'm just picking from my gut at this point. And it's purely because I can in my head name more players on the Titans than I can on the Texans. The two teams, I get confused all the time. So the fact they're playing each other, it's like, I don't even know. I'm going to go with the Texans are the home team, right?
Texans are the home team.
And they just got slapped
stomped,
down. Yeah.
Just beat up.
All right, I'm going to go. Yeah, I'll go with the Titans. The stomping will continue.
The game of the week that no one cares about, even the fans of those teams, Browns on the road to face the Redskins at home.
Oh, jeez.
Now, the weird thing is this does feel like a trappy game, so I'm actually going to go with the Browns on this one. Browns on the road. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I don't know. Who's the Browns quarterback? Is it McCown again?
No,
it's McCown because they had RG3, and he played like a couple of downs.
Oh, yeah, he's out. He's out
done
for the season.
Year, so. And then they had their wide receiver, who was Coleman, whatever his name is, a kid named Coleman, and he broke his hand. So I don't know. I got to go with I'll go with the Redskins. There.
The Skins.
I'll take the
Skins. Seahawks on the road against my Jets. Jets at home. What do you think about that one?
I don't know what to make of the Seahawks, frankly. Mm-hmm. they've scored one touchdown this year, and I feel like they're going to destroy my 49ers this week. Again, we're pre-recording, but the Jets and the Seahawks, like that feels like a Jets win to me. It kind of feels that way just because I just don't think the Seahawks have that mojo anymore. And, I mean, I don't feel like they've got it.
The defensive line of the Jets have been monsters. I mean, we're only a couple weeks in the season, but the Jets' defensive line has been phenomenal. And I kind of feel like the Jets' offense is shocking. I know I'm talking about my Jets here, but their offense has been clicking. So if they can stuff the Seahawks, and the Seahawks, like you said, the Seahawks have not been the team they were last year, even the year before on offense. So I feel like the defensive line is just going to shut them down. And the Jets are just going to throw TDs, and this could be a blowout victory.
Yeah, I feel if it's a close game, then it's going to favor the Seahawks, I think. If it's a low-scoring game, then the Seahawks defense is doing something. They might get a pick six or something like that to turn the game around. I'm going to go with the Jets, though, man. It feels like a Jets win to me.
Feels like a Jets win to me, and I hope so. So next up, the Bills, who have just been garbage. It's sounding like a Rex Ryan firing halfway through the season because they've got a tough divisional game on the road facing the Patriots at home, who cannot lose a game. This feels like a Patriots win, and it feels like another member of the Bills head office is going to get fired after this game.
I'll agree with that. That's they kind of took the easy way out by firing their offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
I'll go with you. I had a message just pop up on my screen and I lost my train of thought. I'll take the Patriots as well.
Interesting game of the week, and I think this might be entertaining. Panthers on the road against the Falcons, offense all day long. What do you think about that game?
I'm sorry, what was it again?
The Carolina Panthers on the road to face the Atlanta Falcons at home.
Oh, that is that's an interesting game. That's an interesting game because I think against the 49ers, the Panthers showed that their defense isn't quite as good as it used to be.
Yeah.
But they also showed that I think Cam Newton is the best player in the NFL.
He elevates everybody on his team.
He's the Michael Jordan of the NFL right now, and everybody can be Scottie Pippen. It's kind of how it feels. No offense to Scottie, but it's unfortunate that he gets stuck with that that label. But, God forbid if you put some actual talent around Cam Newton. Like, what would happen?
imagine Cam Newton on the Patriots right now. It would just be gross.
Yeah, but but then you're talking about the Falcons who, I mean, Matt Ryan is looking pretty good.
He's looking good.
And they're mixing up their run game. They've got people to throw the ball to as long as Julio Jones can stay healthy. I think that Mohamed Sanu, I think, is playing for them this year now. It was formerly with the Bengals. They've got a high octane offense. So it's an interesting type game. Who's the home team? It's in Atlanta, yeah?
It's in Atlanta, yeah.
Oof. Yeah, I don't know, man. I'll take the Falcons. I'm going to take the home team. I take the home team.
Yeah, I don't know either, so I'm going to go with the Falcons, but I think that'll be the game to watch for the week.
That sounds like a really entertaining game to watch.
Yeah, and here's another game that I don't know what to make of it. The Oakland Raiders on the road facing the Baltimore Ravens at home.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with the Ravens, man.
Undefeated before we know what happened in week three.
Yeah, I just don't get it. And the Raiders, they can score. And I really thought that the defense was going to come around much more before the offense did because they've got some young studs on defense too. I think the Raiders are really close to being a good football team.
Absolutely.
As much as that pains me to say it, but I may as well have some good football in the Bay Area outside of Stanford. Yeah, that's a tough matchup. Where is it?
It's going to be in Baltimore.
Mm. Road win in Baltimore would be nice for the Raiders. A road win in Baltimore would be nice, but I got to go with the Ravens. I feel like a home team, something like that. Their defense can step up. I mean, I know Ed Reed and Ray Lewis aren't back there anymore, but they still got some talent on defense. So, and their offense has shown that they can score. I'll go with Baltimore in there.
Ray Lewis is too busy selling cigars. I'm going to go with the Raiders in that one. I'm going to fall into the weekly trap of the Raiders. So we've got a split pick there. Detroit Lions on the road facing the Chicago Bears at home who just look like garbage. This is another garbage game. I don't know that anyone cares about it, but what's your make?
As when you said Lions on the road, and the Lions to me are that team that they can throw the ball deep even though Megatron is gone. And they can still throw the ball, but they're used to playing in that dome.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, they're on the road. Okay, who are they playing on the road? They're probably going to lose. They used to the Bears. Like, oh, God. I feel like the only team – I feel like the Bears could beat the Bengals – no, not the Bengals, the Browns, and maybe the Rams, and that's it.
Yeah.
I got to go with Detroit on that one.
Me too. I can't pick against Stafford after his amazing week one performance. Here's an odd game of the week in the afternoon. Denver Broncos on the road facing the Buccaneers at home.
Did Denver won in week two, right?
They did. They squeaked out a win. They've actually, you know,
squeaked out both of them.
Well, they squeaked out because their offense has just been continuously garbage, but their defense, like I haven't looked at the stats, but I got to think they're like number one or number two defense in the league right now.
And they're playing the Bengals this week. And yeah. And then they're going on the road to play Tampa Bay. And Tampa Bay is a team that I kind of feel like they could win like any given week.
Yeah. If they can get their act together, they could win any given week.
Their offense is clicking, and they're using those guys out of the backfield. Even if Doug Martin's hurt, I think Charles Sims is a really good little back, and he catches that ball in the backfield. He's explosive. They've got targets. I mean, I don't know what Winston is, their quarterback. I don't know what he's doing, but, man, that feels like a trap game a little bit, doesn't it?
Right? Absolutely.
And I don't know if the trap is – I'm not sure which team the trap is. It's
start your kicker. If you got a Tampa Bay kicker or a Broncos kicker, right? Start them that week. Cause
that's got like 15 to 12 written all over
Absolutely.
It. Man. But you know what? I'm going to take Denver because there's a pick six in there somewhere.
All right, I'm gonna go Bucks because
I think we both fell into the trap.
I think we fell into the trap. So, you know, unless it ends in a tie, one of us has got to win that game. The
Rams. I hope that game ends in a tie.
That'd be hilarious. So the Rams, LA Rams on the road, facing off against the Arizona Cardinals, who, you know, again, we talk about last year, the Arizona Cardinals were your pick to make it to the Super Bowl, and they had a great record. They haven't really had consistency this year just yet, but the Rams are just complete garbage. So, yeah, I'm gonna go with What's that?
They haven't scored a touchdown yet.
Mm-hmm.
And they won a game. What the hell is that?
And they
about?
Still but, won a game.
Yeah, I think it in yeah it's a card. It doesn't matter where it's
doesn't
played.
Matter.
I'll take the Cardinals. Absolutely.
Here's another interesting game. The New Orleans Saints are on the road to face off against the San Diego Chargers at home.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Take the over, baby. Take the over.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's weird because the Saints' defense really hasn't shown up. I mean, you know, we talk about the Saints, and it's always like who can score the most touchdowns, and the Chargers aren't necessarily – well, especially with Woodhead out. I don't know if Woodhead's going to be back in week four, and this is the trouble with picking in advance. But the Chargers are a reasonably balanced team where the Saints are just an offensive-only team. But offense wins games, and defense wins championships. So I don't know what to make of that game.
I don't know what to make of that statement because it just doesn't make any damn sense.
Yeah, but that's how it is. Offense wins games. Defense wins championships.
I'm not buying that. Crap. I don't like the Chargers, so I'm going to pick the Saints.
I'm going to have to go with the Chargers. Okay. And I think I've fallen into the trap for that one. I'm going with the Chargers, even though I want to pick against them. Next up, the Cowboys, still featuring Dak with rookie quarterback who seems to be the little engine that could on the road facing your San Francisco 49ers at home.
Oh, crap. Oh, man. You know what? I feel like the 49ers have a pretty good defense. I know that Cam and the Panthers dropped, 40-something points on him. But that's also because Cam Newton, I mean, if you see some of these touchdown passes, it doesn't matter that Ted Ginn is catching them. I mean, anybody. He's dropping them in the basket.
He could throw to me.
Yeah,
I think my 4-0 time is, you know, like 20 seconds or 25 seconds or something like that.
It's bad. I mean, he's just dropping that ball right where it needs to be, and he knows his guys. He knows what they're capable of. So that's what I'm getting to is I feel like the Niners have a pretty solid defense. That's a good rivalry.
Yeah.
It's the kind of game that I think everybody can get up for. I have a feeling that Colin Kaepernick is going to be the 49ers quarterback by then.
Interesting.
I'm thinking that's why I part of me feels like the Niners could win this week after Gabbert gets pulled in the first half because he's thrown a couple picks or whatever and, you know, lightning in a bottle with Kaepernick because he's talented. And if they can figure out how to use him correctly, get Harbaugh on the phone and say, "Hey, how did you do it?" I feel like they could win that game. I don't know, man. I normally would say take the home team, flip a coin. I'll take the Niners just because that's where my heart is.
I normally would pick the Cowboys, but I feel like this has got a Niners win written all over it. I feel like you said, I think their defense is gonna stifle the Cowboys. And I think Dak, being a rookie quarterback, that's the kind of game that could get him off his game. If he was a third or fourth-year quarterback, I'd probably pick the Cowboys. But as a first-year quarterback, I got to go with the 49ers on that one.
Niners could be 3-1 after that game.
Yeah.
They won't be, but they could.
They could. You never know, any given Sunday. Now, here's an interesting matchup. The Kansas City Chiefs is the evening game against the Steelers. Now, that's kind of a weird matchup because I feel like the Chiefs match up nicely against the Steelers. Steelers' defense is stout. Their offense is stout. But the Kansas City Chiefs have a good defense as well. And if they can get the, you know, if they can control the flow of the game, if they can control the ball, you know, that's the kind of game they can grind out. And that's an interesting game for the Sunday night matchup.
Yeah, when you have a team like the Steelers where you feel like they could score on any play, when you've got Roethlisberger throwing to
Antonio Brown?
Yeah, thank you.
who can catch anywhere in the field, one-handed, backhanded, rolling down the field.
Yeah, exactly, with five guys on him. So it's when you can do that. And are they going to have their running back by then?
Tough to say, right? Tough to say with those injuries.
Well, no, I think he's suspended for the first few games for smoking the pot, I think. But I'm not – what the hell is his – I can't even think of his name. Anyway, but they still have D'Angelo Williams, who is playing really well, like revived his career there in the games that he gets to play. So – and it's in Pittsburgh, you say?
It's in Pittsburgh.
I got to go with the Steelers, man.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Steelers as well, but I feel like that's got an upset – written all over it. I mean, we don't know whether there's going to be injuries by that point. There could be. But a healthy Steelers team is a dangerous Steelers team. Lastly, the Monday night game, which I feel like this is a game that should have been flexed. The New York Giants on the road to face off against the Minnesota Vikings at home. I don't want to watch that game.
How was that on Monday night?
Terrible Monday night.
Terrible. It's terrible. It's terrible. Wow. I think that's... Well, the Vikings could still be undefeated.
Yeah.
They could both be undefeated, right? I mean, the Giants haven't lost
could.
Yet. That just feels like a Giants win to me.
I'm with you. I mean, I want to, my gut, because I want to pick against the Giants because their play has been so terrible. But I got to go with the Giants on that one as well.
Yeah, it feels that way to me. Before we wrap up here, this is the link that was sent to me while we were talking, and I kind of lost my train of thought, and maybe this is something we could talk about on a future episode, but it's hangover-free alcohol.
I saw that this morning. It's like what's weird is they had an opportunity to call it Synthahol, which I feel like you got to give some props to Star Trek because there's so many things that Star Trek 20, 25 years ago now kind of predicted or kind of, you know, led technology on, and they're talking about it's doesn't affect your liver, doesn't affect your kidneys, and they've got two different kinds of alcohol, and it's supposed to not have the bad characteristics of alcohol, and they didn't call it Synthahol, they called it something else.
Alka-Synth.
They should have called it Synthahol, man. You got to call that Synthahol.
I'm not a Star Trek guy, so I mean, did they have something on Star Trek called Synthahol?
They absolutely did, and that's how they described it, is all the effects of alcohol without any of the negative impacts to your body, without a hangover, you know, all that. But that being said, that's part of the reason I like alcohol. It's got all the badness to it, right?
Well, I'm looking at this here, and I'm just reading the headlines. I haven't read it. It's the new drink, and this is from independent.co.uk, so I don't know how legit that is. I have no idea. Written by Katie Foster, by the way. At Katie Foster on Forrester, whatever. The new drink known as Alka-Synth, Alcosynth, is designed to mimic the positive effects of alcohol, air quotes there, but doesn't cause a dry mouth, nausea, or a throbbing head. So I don't know what they're referring to as the positive, the positive effects of alcohol. I mean, it depends on what you're... the context is very important there when you talk about positive. But, that's interesting. That's the story that was sent to me. That was why I kind of lost my train of thought, because dude, what's that about? You know?
Yeah, I think that'll be good for an extended conversation on our week five Sharing Our Pairings episode 86. I think that'd be a good extended conversation.
Just for something to talk about. But yeah, man, this was a good show, a little quick show. And the Zombrew is a solid beer. I've had several of them, and I really enjoy it. And what the hell is the cigar called again?
The Foundry Time Flies.
Time Flies with the sweet band here. It's a good cigar, man. It's a solid smoke. And yeah, that's about it. I think that's it. With Homebrew, I've got I'm making a blueberry wheat. I don't know if I told you guys that. I'm making blueberry wheat for the Halloween party. Did I mention that?
Yeah, I think you mentioned that. You're going to keg it.
Yeah, we're going to keg it, and I'm gonna put it on the blueberry here in a couple of days in secondary and see how that goes. I've got some blueberry puree that I'm going to put it on, and if necessary, I can add some. They have this like organic fruit flavor extract stuff that you can use that just to kind of bump the flavor.
Non-fermentable or?
It's non-fermentable, correct. The blueberry puree that I'm using is fermentable, so I'm putting in secondary fermentation, so it's probably going to kick in another fermentation, and the yeast are going to start getting active again, but it shouldn't be too large. And the concern there is you start to lose that flavor. Those sugars and things that are coming from the blueberry that I want
are going to get consumed.
They're going to get consumed by the yeast. So, and there's different things that you could do without going into way too much detail. I could actually kill off all the yeast if I want to. Since I am in a forced carbonate, I don't need them to carbonate it. I could kill off the yeast and then put it on this puree, and that way I'm not going to lose any of the sugar, that's what we're going to do with the hard cider that my wife and I made. We've got it. It's just chilling in secondary at this point, clarifying and things like that, and the flavor is just kind of build. What we're going to do is we're going to kill the yeast off, and there's a tablet that you drop in there. I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head. And that way we can back sweeten it with just straight up sugar and not have any kind of problem as far as another fermentation is concerned. And we're probably going to add some of that organic apple extract in there as well, just to get a little bit more apple flavor. Cause right now it's really dry. I used the champagne yeast too. So it's really dry, which I like, but it doesn't have a ton of apple flavor to it. So
yeah,
we're going to see how that goes, but yeah, it'll be interesting. I've never really worked with fruit this way. So I'm curious to see how it goes.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how it turns out. So that'll probably be episode 86 or 87. We find out how that turned out. It's either going to be a big hit or it's going to suck. But hopefully it's a big hit.
Thanks for the vote of confidence, Jim.
I think it's going to be good. Double R Brewing coming to a California brewery near you in the near future, I'm sure. So make sure to check us out. The following Wednesday, we'll be live back again. I think baseball's wrapping up, and hopefully we'll be done being busy on the road. And as we say in Sharing Your Pairings, drink better, but drink less.